The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Sitting on a bar stool, kind of short and kind of square, through the foam in his mustache, his voice filled the air. Talking about a state of mind, son. Talking about the state of Jefferson. It's a wave on a dusty road. It's a logger's heavy load. It's a cattle on the hill. It's a range full of thrills. It's a way of life. Settles in your soul.
Settles in your soul.
Soul of Jefferson.
The Soul of Jefferson, and the Soul of Jefferson just spoke. That was Janet Chandler.
Well, we can end the show now. I have spoken.
Yeah. What? We can't hear you over the music. There we go.
Thank you. One of those mornings, folks.
Should we make the music shorter?
No.
I don't know. It's up to you.
It's all good.
Okay, this is Terry Raposa and
Janet Chandler
and
Wynn Carpenter. Good morning.
With Jefferson State of Mind, we are broadcasting live from downtown Reading at KCNR 96.5, where the FM does sound better.
If it's working.
It's working.
When it's working.
1460 AM, and we are your talk radio. We're also broadcasting live on KCNR and streaming live at KCNR1460.com, KCNR1460.com, and we archive forever.
And ever.
And ever.
Amen.
Amen.
Now, we are going to have a special guest on here who's going to put on his headphones right now. I just know it. And we have Councilman Dr. Danuka with us. How you doing, Doc?
Good morning, Terry. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. And good morning, Wynn and Janet.
Good morning.
Pleasure to have you.
Yeah, this is we're going to try to separate this in two segments, our program here. And if you have a question for Doc, we probably won't take any till for the first half hour anyway, because we have some things that we want to kind of get in the open. So, Doc, a lot of stuff going on with this. I think it was Todd Jones that said it was a 1% sales tax. I believe it's a 13.4% sales tax. It's a 1 cent sales tax. We just had a program, Poke the Hornet's Nest, that had Tanessa Audette on. It was very good, very telling. You've got to, whether you agree with her or not, you've got to give her kudos, because that lady is standing up for what she believes in. And I really respect what she did, respect what she does, and, so thankful that she had the courage to step up and talk about a lot of things that are going on. So, Doc, what's your position on this 1 cent sales tax?
So, before I go there, I just wanted to let you know that I have spoken on the city council from the dais when Tanessa was being attacked, and I have mentioned that I have no doubts about her integrity or about her intentions and desires for the best of the city. So I just want to let you know that whatever the differences of opinions may be, I have all the respect for her.
Well, the thing is that what she's dealing from is facts. I didn't hear her even use an opinion. And I watched everything she had. So,
but she has faced some attacks. So I just wanted to let you know.
And I don't think she deserves that. I think that all of you, have the right to bring forth your opinion. That's what you're there for.
Yes.
Anyway, so did you scrutinize the budget before you voted on it?
Yes, I did.
So you read it?
Yep.
And you still voted for it?
Well, we have no choice but to vote for a budget. The question is, how do you make the budget balanced? And one of the things which I did was, they were trying to have the future sales tax projection to 4%. And I said, no, that's much more rosy than it should be. We have already seen that happen in 22, 23, 24, that projections were high, the raises were increased, and that's why we are in a hole.
Okay, so, and I don't mean to, I understand that, and I know that's a different subject, but I guess the thing I'm asking is, if you had to vote for it, you had to vote it in, how did she vote no? How could she vote no? Why did you have a vote if you had to vote it in? Wouldn't it just be a rubber stamp?
No, absolutely. We don't want to be a rubber stamp, but what I'm saying is that what happened in the last 4 years is a separate story. What's happening in the future is a separate story. So in the future, what we tried to do for this budget was, what my direction to the city staff and the council was, that I want to see the balanced budget. I want to see the conservative projections, conservative management of the budget. And they pulled back on the expenses, and they were able to do that. So it is not perfectly balanced, because some of those things come in the form of grants later.
But my question is why did you have a vote on it? If you're saying you had to vote on it, so if you had...
I see what your question is. So I got you. So okay, basically, what I'm saying is we have to adopt a budget, because otherwise...
How did you vote no then?
So that's the difference. So let me explain to you.
Sure.
Like, unlike the federal government, if we don't approve a budget, you can't pay the police and the fire and those essential services, or garbage, or sewer, or electricity. We can't shut that down. If you don't approve the budget, you can't pay for those services. There'll be piles of garbage in the city. So we don't have the luxury like a federal government to shut down, because even when the federal government shut down, they still run the essential services, right? So you have to approve that budget. The question is, how do you want to see the budget? So 4 out of 5 agreed that in the current situation, going forward, this is what we can achieve. Tanessa didn't agree with that, and her reason was not that she didn't agree with the budget itself. Her reason was that she wanted to see more financial information. And that has been a bone of contention. So let me be very clear about that part, if I may bring that. I'm a business owner. I've run my businesses for 20 years. I've had 100 employees plus. And you give me the financials in any format, in any form, even if you want to confuse me, I can see through them. I can see what the problem is and how we need to change.
Well, I guess the question I would have with that then, how did the $3 million suddenly, out of Barry Tippin's mouths to our ears, go to $8 million? And you trust and you think you're being told the truth by Barry Tippin? I mean, everything I watched was a real dance. What say you, sir?
So I always believe in trust but verify. So I don't take anybody's words, and that is why I would bring you back to what I said was, when they proposed the budget, they said, well, our sales tax we are projecting will keep increasing by 4%.
Mm-hmm.
I said, that's not going to happen. That's too rosy. At that time, other city council members, including Tanessa, went with the higher projections in the preliminary budget calculations. 2 months later, when the final budget proposal came to in front of us, everybody realized that, yep, 4% is too rosy, and they've agreed to reduce it to 2% sales projection. So that is the major thing which I can make. And that's why I'm being very cautious about what we project in the future.
Well, when staff had said that, you know, this is sort of a fluid thing, we really only can see what's going on, and we sort of, I guess the best way to explain it is that he was saying, well, we sort of have to just roll with the punches and see where things go. We can't project out 10 years or 5 years or 4 years, yet Tippin did. But we can't do that. What we have to do is we have to see what happens. We can see what happens with next year with what we have, but we can't go further than that. Yet we have a 10-year plan that somewhere $6 million turned into $60 million. How do you explain that?
And that's why I said of course, no one has a crystal ball, right?
Yes, sir.
But we know, what does a federal government do? Feds have a projection of 2% inflation rate per year. That's their target inflation rate. It might go 2.5, it might be less, but they really tightly control the economy. That's our best guide to model the future projections. I do not want to exceed that. That is why nobody can project, you know, nobody has a crystal ball. So that is why I think that is the best way to do it. Either you consider it flat or maximum 2% raise.
Okay,
flat.
Maybe I'm not getting this. Maybe Janitor Wink can help
me out. How about keeping it flat?
Yeah.
That's fine.
Wait. Keep it flat, mm-hmm. Have a forensic audit done, mm-hmm. And then that will tell you where you are so that you're not hurting yourselves by adding, you know, a 2-4 whatever percentage you want to add, or the council votes to add to it. Keep it flat.
Mm-hmm.
Keep it there no matter what, mm-hmm. And do a forensic audit and use an agency that has not been paid off or whatever to come up with the magic numbers that, you know, everybody thinks they need to know. No, it needs to be truth. And with that forensic audit, there's a lot of power with that. And if people that are governing us are not using forensic audits, they are doing us a complete disservice. They need to use a forensic audit because there's power of arrest with that. So you need to do that. They will expose everything. And that's exactly what needs to happen, whether it's city or county. It does not matter. It needs to be done. So I would hope and pray that you and the other council members would at least entertain that idea, have that discussion in your open public meeting, and come to a decision as to do it, and sooner rather than later.
I'm absolutely fine with that, as far as the flat versus 2% is concerned, but I'm comparing this as the last 4 years' projections of 12% escalation
right.
every year, which was completely
crazy.
Crazy. It was not just rosy, it was completely crazy.
Right.
And that was the very basis of giving all these raises, 23%, 24%, whatever it is, right?
Right.
In last 4 years. And I'll go to the forensic audit side of it. But what Tanessa is raising is good questions, and we should have the answers for that, and I'm okay with the forensic audit for that.
Mm-hmm.
But I just want you to know that these are something which are crystal clear to me even now.
Right.
That the crux of the problem was these crazy rosy projections were made. They were not corrected for 3 years, and the raises were given based on that, which is why we are in a hole. The only question I have for Tanessa is this. For part of those 4 years, 2 years, she was on the council. Part of those raises happened in 23. Why?
Well, I think she explained it. Now, whether you believe this or not, this is what she said. She said she didn't realize it.
Well,
now,
how can you not realize this?
Well, I mean, how can you? We're confused about a lot of things.
Yeah.
Okay, again, well, we have to vote for this. We have to do it. But if we don't do it, we can vote no, but we can't vote no.
Well, there comes my question.
Yeah. If
you are obligated, mandated, you're required to just every year rubber stamp the budget, when does the opportunity to make a change, to make a difference, to correct things come up? When does it happen?
It happens it should happen all the time. And whatever decisions were made 2 or 3 years earlier, I was not there. However, what I can do is look forward.
Yes.
And absolutely, you're right. We should not be rubber stamping it. And I do not mean that we're rubber stamping the budget. What I'm saying is we have to pass a budget, and it's incumbent upon us to be cautious and pass a good budget, a reasonable projection. Nobody has a crystal ball, and a very conservative. I'm a fiscal conservative. So pass a budget which is fiscally conservative to continue the essential services. And I can say that in this budget process, I went pretty hard on the staff for saying that you need to reduce your projections and the cost. So that's where I think we have done it for the future projections. That I can tell you.
Well,
now,
yeah, I think that, okay, going back to it, it's like, okay, Tanessa is maybe having this epiphany, but here's the deal. What she's doing and the way she's standing up about this stuff and all the research she did and everything, and I read all that.
I respect it.
No, okay. The thing is that in doing all that stuff, it could be that she just came around to it. I mean, if you're 2 years in, I mean, you're brand new in this. If you're 2 years in, maybe you didn't get it at first. Maybe you didn't check it the way you should have at first. I don't care if she was there when they passed some of this stuff, because at that point, she was trusting staff. That's what I got from her. Now, you can believe her or not, but she said she was trusting Barry Tippin and trusting her staff. And now, the things I heard, and I'm a simple guy, I may not know everything, but when I have somebody telling me, first it's $3 million, 5 minutes later it's $8 million, and then we don't really know, and then we had $6 million, now it's going to be $60 million. Well, what, I mean, come on. You know, I really can't throw anything at her or blame her for her position now. In fact, I not just respect it, but everything I heard from her was fact. She even admitted the fact that, yeah, you know, I messed up. I didn't know this stuff. I should have.
Who is responsible in the first place for giving out a proposed budget? Is that the city manager?
So generally the city staff and the manager supervising them will propose a budget, and then it comes to the council for discussion. We have had several workshops over the last 3 months, for 6 months actually, for this, that how do you balance it?
Well, if he is so inept that he cannot give a decent proposal, why is he still there?
And during this budget discussion, and you can go back and watch the videos, when Janessa was raising this issue that I can't understand what they're giving me the information, tell me what's going on, and so my question was, simple was, hey, what do you think is a problem? What do you think is a solution? Let's vote on it. Let's bring it up. If you feel that we need, whatever we need, throw it on the table and let's see whether we vote for it, convince everybody else for that. But if you just say that, oh, I don't have the information, that is an argument which is weak argument. Because we have the information, and it's incumbent upon me to figure out how do I read that information. How do I find where the problem is? I can tell you in 2 minutes, first time I looked at the city budget, I could tell you in 2 minutes when they said 12% sales tax raise rising everywhere. I said, right there, there's a problem there.
Well, at $458,000 a year, Barry Tippin should be able to see it within 2 minutes also.
And by the way, Chico, and I want to add to this, Janet, and give it back to her, but Chico's city manager made, and this is 2023, $340,000 a year, Merced, $331,000, and Roseville, $497,000, but Roseville is twice as big as we are.
And Roseville is a rich place. We are not.
Well, why is this guy there, Doc?
Well, for $458,000 a year, I'll muck it up.
Okay, so that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying just to save this, but the reality is this is why I wanted to be involved in the city council. This is one of the reasons I wanted to be involved in the city council.
Yep.
But we have a huge pension problem. We have a huge, the purse and all those problems. We have that, and we have to be fiscally conservative in managing public's money. Jesus says that you have to be a good steward of the resources that are given to you. We can't just waste it away. And that was one of the reasons I wanted to be involved. And that's a very valid question, that how did we go from 200,000 range or 250,000 range to 400,000 plus range?
Our city attorney makes $482,000 a year. This is 2023. Roseville, which is twice as big as we are, and you just said, Doc, and I agree with you, a very rich county, he only makes $426,000. Merced makes $67,000. Now these are all, the Merced and Chico are comparable with us. They both have more population. But the Chico, which is probably a little closer to our economy, it's $307,000. Why are we paying $500,000 a year to an attorney?
So this is the crux of the problem, that this happened. This was based on these rosy and, as Vin put it, crazy projections that we will always have the good time coming.
Who makes the projections?
So those projections come from the staff. And city council, but at the same time, I don't think as city council we can wash our hands away and say that, oh, we are not responsible for this. If somebody is approving that, they have to be responsible for that decision making. That's why you have the elected city council representative.
When I heard Tanessa, she did take responsibility and said she made a mistake.
Yeah, I'm not even saying blaming her only.
Okay.
What I'm saying is that what happened in 21 to 24 was completely crazy. If I were there, I would not have made those decisions.
I wonder what he makes right now. This is 2023. I wonder what Tippin makes right now.
Well, on those projections that you just did, and I just crunched the numbers on basic hourly rate, whatnot, we're looking at $36,000 a month. Is what Tippin makes, according to that forecasted number right now.
And this is an old one.
And that's an old one. So $36,000 a month to do what? To mess with the city council, to forecast all the chaos, and he's running the circus, and it's going crazy, and you guys are sitting up on the dais doing what you need to do, but you're not getting all the information you need to have
in order
to make good, solid, projected decisions. And then when you ask for information, they dance and say, well, we can't get that to you, or they drag their feet, they do whatever they do. So, for $36,000 a month until he's let go, he's making bank.
Well, not only that, we have the, you know, people who retire can make up to 90% per year.
Oh, right. And we've seen that over years for all the city managers have been obscene.
So I know what you're saying, Wayne. Or only thing I'm disagreeing with you with this is part, we have the information. City Council has the information. I take that responsibility. I have the information. I wouldn't blame the finance director. I don't think he's misrepresenting anything. I don't think he's hiding information. We have the information. And that was what I was telling everyone. You have the information. The question is, what's your plan? Present your plan. Do you want to have a clawback? In a previous show, someone asked a good question. Do you want to have a clawback? Okay, fine. You want a clawback? Go ahead. Present it. Bring a motion. Anyone can bring a motion. They can bring a motion of clawing back. Now, can we do that? We are contractually required to honor the contracts, especially with the unions.
Wouldn't that enter into bankruptcy?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, that would go into bankruptcy.
So short of bankruptcy, you can't really claw back from the unions,
right?
And which is majority of the city workers.
Yep.
So, but what I'm saying is, only thing I'm asking is this, Terry. I hear you. I see the problem. Even if you missed it in the past, that's okay. There's always a time to correct it. But make a suggestion. Make a plan of correction.
Here's a suggestion. Okay, and
here. But not you.
No. Here's a correction.
Yeah.
Okay. Now this is. I hope I explain this right, and guys, help me out if I don't. When it comes to Barry Tippin, when I watched it, I watched the video. It went from 3 million. By the time he closed his mouth, it was 8 million. You guys weren't aware of the 8 million. So how can you not? How can you trust a guy that's changing his tune in 5 minutes, and you're saying, well, you know, we didn't verify it, we didn't do this, we didn't do that, we really need to do that, we didn't do our job, but how can you do your job when somebody changes their mind in 2 or 3 minutes? What say you, Doc?
I agree with you, and that's one of the questions. Accountability, right? Accountability is a question. And that's a valid question also. If you know, she wants to bring that thing to the table and say, hey, you want to claw back from the whatever unions or managers or something, or if you want to change the personnel, then bring it to the table.
Well, why does she have to be the one to bring it to the table? If we all know the facts.
If someone is raising the question, because the reason I'm saying is that I can correct the future. I cannot correct the past. That's my position.
Okay, but the future, according to the city manager, the future changed in a matter of 5 seconds in a meeting you were in, so you weren't privy, with all due respect, you weren't privy.
Yeah.
No one was privy of the information. He was just giving it to you right there off the top of his head. Oh, it's only an extra 5 million.
Right.
Oh, well, does it mean it goes to 5? No, it goes to 8. And he's telling you this. Why should she be the one or any, all of you should say it. Hey, this guy isn't giving me this straight scoop. I'm a simple guy. We're simple people in this room, simple people in this community. We're just wondering how this guy can get away with that. And everybody just goes, well, somebody else should do it.
That's what I'm saying. This budget, we were pretty tight. I was pretty conservative in making the projections. And that's a fair question for hold the accountability. And, I mean, one of the part is this. We have city manager is retiring in a few months. You know that.
That just means we have an unfunded liability.
Well,
now that's great. Okay, so he retires, so we'll get another person in there. But this guy's going to retire on what? 90% of probably 500,000.
You would have that anyway. You would have that either way.
Pardon me?
You would have that anyway, whether he retires now or
everybody comes to Shasta County in Redding to retire.
And then they leave for Idaho.
Yes.
Well, the point is that he's going to retire. Okay, so he'll be gone. So that, whew, got rid of that guy. So,
but not the unfunded liability.
But not the unfunded liability. And so the deal is that if you fire somebody and you do it because of negligence and you do it because of distrust and you can prove anything that he broke the law in a certain way, which I'm kind of getting the innuendo from certain people that he did break the law, if he did, not saying he did, but if he did break the law, then.
I.e. forensic audit.
Yeah. And if you use a forensic audit, it holds up in court. Isn't that right, Wynn?
Yeah, it has arresting power.
That's right. It has arresting power. You guys are not doing that.
I've been barking this for years. Yeah. A forensic audit has arresting power. And if any governmental agency would just start doing it, it'd make all of our lives a hell of a lot better.
I mean, this isn't just, you know, we can't all just go along to get along. And I think that at this point, with these salaries, they're just insane. And I'll leave it with this, the police chief. Our police chief makes $465,000 a year. I remember Paletti was making $220,000, and that wasn't even that long ago. And when you look at that amount of money for the police chief in Chico that has more people makes $351,000. So there's a 26% increase our police chief has. Merced's $265,000. And Roseville, who's twice as big as we are, still doesn't make as much as our police chief. He makes $448,000. Ours makes $465,000.
That's another $36,000 a month.
And how do you sell this to county and city residents who have a median income of $70,000 and an average income? Yeah, but an average income of more like 35.
Yes,
there
ma'am.
You go.
Yes, ma'am.
They're making per year what the chief and the city manager are making in a month.
Yeah.
So without the benefits.
Hard sell.
Well, that's the question that how do you claw back? Do you want to claw back? I mean, there's short of declaring a bankruptcy. There is
no
clawback.
So if there's a new police chief, you're saying the new police chief has to make at least $465,000.
I'm not saying that.
Well,
I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is existing.
I don't want to do a. I didn't say anything about a clawback.
Yeah.
I'm saying this is reality.
We can change the future. That's what
I know. That's well. That's what you've been saying.
And we will.
And I agree with you. So let's change the future. Let's get a guy in there who will work for $365,000.
Okay.
I'm just saying. We'll talk to your city manager.
That's a fair question. That's a fair question.
Another question I have too, and hopefully you know this, but I've heard this from different people over the course of time, that anytime a staff member gets a raise, anybody above them, they all start getting their raises too. Everybody gets a bump. Mm-hmm. Everybody gets a bump, and it depends on the percentages and everything else. But if a staff member of whatever level gets a raise, and rightfully so, they deserve that raise, then everybody else above them gets it, and it just balloons out of control. Is that true?
So this is true not just in the city in general. What happened in California in the last 10 years, the minimum wage has gone from $8 to, what, $16, something like that. But let me tell you, in healthcare field, in my own practices, it has gone to $21 minimum, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's doubled.
Right.
So what does this mean? It's not just the minimum wage now. Your middle managers, your high-end managers, everyone says, hey, I want to make more than my subordinate, so I want to raise also for the equal percentage. You have to keep that in mind. The hard reality of state of California is such that the inflation, which has been a hyperinflation in last four, we cannot forget that part of the equation also.
Right, right.
That some of these wages, they're justified.
I'm not saying
all of them. I'm not saying 40%, 50%.
I agree.
But all of us feel the inflation is killing us, right? Food, gas, housing,
taxes,
medical care. Everything is high.
Taxes, everything
is higher.
And more taxes.
So for that reason, some of those raises are justified, in my opinion, which match the inflation.
But they're not those raises, Doc. For the lower level,
mm-hmm.
come when the higher level asks for a raise. Then the lower level gets a raise automatically.
And please don't economically confuse the two terms, inflation and rising prices.
Don't.
Inflation means too many government dollars in circulation,
right.
which causes higher prices.
That is the reason we have this hyperinflation by trillions of dollars spent in the last 4 years.
No, that is the inflation.
And
inflation means too many dollars.
Right.
That's where the blame lies.
I agree with you 100%.
Yeah.
This was an artificial inflation created by our federal government and state government.
Yep.
There is no, you think that you raise the minimum wage from $8 to $21, you think people will be richer? No. It's just that your dollar will not go as far.
Won't go as far, yeah.
It won't buy as much as you do.
We're going to have to go off to our break, Doc.
Yeah.
Thank you, brother. But we've got to go off to our break here. And when we come back, we'll come back again with Dr. Danuka. We'll be talking about this. We'll also be talking about the medical school, but we want to finish up a little bit on this, then we'll go to the medical school, and time has come.
For 50.
Let's get her done. Stepping on your line.
I'm writers and critics who prophesize with your pen. And keep your eyes wide, the chance won't come again. And don't speak too soon, for the wheel's still in spin. And there's no telling who that it's naming. But the loser now will be later to win. For the times, they are a-changing.
Most everyone knows that Orchard Nutrition Center has a big selection of vitamins and supplements, a fresh bakery and deli, organic groceries, and certified organic produce from Shasta County and surrounding areas. What I know is, my mom loves shopping at Orchard Nutrition Center. Her motto, you are what you eat. If you eat healthy, you'll be healthy. She says that all the time. Personally, I believe her. As a kid, I like things that are sweet. So when she comes home with farm-fresh local fruit, trust me, it's sweet. Mom loves all the local veggies. And Dad, he likes meat. Orchard carries locally grown, 100% grass-fed beef. So guess what? Dad's even eating healthy, and he doesn't even know it. If you haven't been to Orchard Nutrition, you owe it to yourself and the ones you love. Just remember what my mom says. You are what you eat. If you eat healthy, you'll be healthy. It all starts at Orchard Nutrition Center in the Cypress Square Shopping Center. Open 7 a.m. to 9 p.m., 7 days a week.
Are you ready for the ultimate slapdash? Slap Wars returns to the Wind River Resort and Casino Event Center. Join Hard Bot Productions for this battle of the hands on Saturday, September 13th. Watch it all while we slap. out to be the last Slapper Standard. Tickets for this thrilling competition start at $35. Must be 21 to attend. Tickets include $10 in free slot play. For tickets or complete details, visit TwinRiver.com or call 1-800-280-YOU-WIN. Find your moment at Twin River Resort and Casino.
Now is a great time to prepare for the upcoming wildfire season. REU and city staff are busy clearing vegetation to mitigate wildfire risk to our power lines, facilities, and the community. You can also prepare by trimming back shrubs and tree branches that are closer than 5 feet from your home. Clear debris from your roof and gutter and clear dead vegetation on your property. For information about tree trimming and proximity to power lines, call 530-224-4356. Please remember, we all need to work together to prevent wildfires in our community.
Sally Lou.
Power to the people.
We don't need to give power to the people. They've already
got it.
They just don't know it.
Yeah.
They just need to exercise it.
Exercise the power. Exactly.
Be told the truth. I mean, in all fairness to you, Doc, I mean, you guys just aren't being told the truth. In all fairness to you, sir. And you're new on the council, and, you know, we're not, Doc is a wonderful man. He's a public servant and somebody who
and
is always honest and out there for the people. You know, regardless of when Tanessa decided that she was going to do what she's doing, which I think a lot of people applaud her for, she's doing it. The point is that, like you said, who cares about the past? I don't give a rip. I really don't give a rip. So, is there anything else that we have on that we wanted to talk about?
I think we've driven it into the ground.
Okay, well, I have a couple of questions here by a fellow named Jim Burnett. Siskiyou Steve, we're going to go into a subject now. If you have something really quick, just really, really quick, that's great, because we only have a little bit of time and we want to talk about the medical school. So what say you, Steve?
Yeah, I'm all for that medical school. Bless Dr. DeNuca for that. Dr. DeNuca, my question is, you know, you mentioned when you were up here in Yreka that we need to hold the tax money in the counties and not pay the state. And you mentioned accountability this morning, again, with your county and your city. The state has no accountability. And so, again, I stand with Wynn and you and myself very strongly. We need to push the taxes stay in the counties. The counties run the state. The state does not run the counties. Thank you guys for your show.
That sounds like the whole basis of the state of Jefferson and its constitution, in which the counties collect the money they keep and send a small portion to the state.
Very small portion.
This is right, very close to what Steve said, and you have been talking about for ages now, that right now in our structure, most of our taxes go to where? Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
A little less goes to state. Mm-hmm. Very little actually stays locally, if mm-hmm. you see. Even the sales tax, which we are debating right now, mm-hmm. of that, 6.25% goes to the state. 1% stays locally. And all these federal and state taxes, there are two characteristics with them. Number one, they're top-down, mm-hmm. which local people have no say in that, really, except through the representative democracy or republic. But we do not have any direct say in that. So they're top-down.
Any truth to what people are being told about the Rite Aid building on Eureka Way being looked at by the city of Reading for more office space, and how are we doing that when we don't have any money? Have you heard that?
I have not heard that.
Okay.
But
okay.
To complete the thought, so one thing is the state and federal taxes are top-down where we have no direct say.
Right.
Second, they are the major portion of our taxes. City gets only 1% of your tax, whereas 30% goes to the state, federal, 10% plus goes to the state government. And the second part is every time a dollar goes to D.C. or Sacramento, part of it comes back to us, part of it is stolen, part of it is wasted. It should be exactly, our country was foundation was based on that most of the control is local, most of the services are local, most of the taxes stay local.
The Constitution of Jefferson.
So the pyramid has been reversed, right? So what I like to see is federal government taxes should go down less than 10%. State taxes should go down to less than 3%, if at all. Something like that. I'm just throwing a number.
But with all due respect, that's kind of irrelevant. It's
right,
not going to happen.
Right now, what do we do here?
Yeah, right. That's what we're trying to talk about.
Now, it comes to, let me just say one line on that. So that's what I'm about. What do we do in our current structure of federal and state structure? What can we do? What I believe is this is what we can do. Rather than fighting over a piece of pie, we can make the pie bigger. What I'm looking at is, how do we create wealth here? How do we build the economic engine, which is our local and regional?
It isn't up to the government.
It's not. The government will never
do it. If the city of Reading gets out of it, it'll help build the economy.
I will be there to get the city government out of it. So, what I'm just saying is, what we need to look at as a community is, how do we create the engine, economic engine, for the future for our region?
Okay. That leads us into the subject that we wanted to talk about. Jim Burnett, who is a wonderful man, I always call the voice of reason. He and Win Carpenter are twins in that regard. But I think the thing that's really neat is the fact that Jim wrote some questions here, and I'm going to read them. So, Doc, recently you and other public officials have discussed the benefits of establishing a medical school in Shasta County. It has been reported that you, along with Supervisor Kevin Cry and CEO Dave Rickert, met with representatives of UC Davis Medical School to discuss the possibility of opening up a branch campus here in Reading. Number one, given the chronic lack of money to fund basic city and county services, how on earth do we fund a medical school? We've been told the city of Reading can't even provide enough adequate police and fire protection without raising our sales tax over 13%. And the county struggles with their budget, too. That's the first question.
Okay. Great question. Where is the money? Show me the money. Okay. So we have the need of improving the medical healthcare access, and we have the desire. People want that. Now, but I will say that we have an opportunity. How do we have the opportunity? First, at local level, county budget, half of that budget is HHSA budget. Most of that is spent, which is very difficult to find exactly how and what benefit is providing. So,
yeah, Jones tried to find that out when he was on council or the board. He was having nothing but trouble.
And our county board of supervisors do realize that, and they're actually looking at that as, okay, how do we make a productive, constructive program to build that in the future? So that could help us bring the local side of it. Mm-hmm. The second side of it is, for a too long a time, our rural area in North State, north of Sacramento, has been ignored by both our state government as well as federal government. However, this is the opportunity. Rise of Trump has shown that federal government and state government has ignored the rural area at their own peril. Mm-hmm. And even state government, from Newsom onwards, are realizing that. So they're realizing that they need to do something for our rural area, because we have been ignored far too long. So therein lies an opportunity to attract those dollars from federal and state government. And there are some programs that are going to come.
Well, I would take the dollars as long as they keep their hands out of it.
I agree with you.
But the question is talking about the issue with UC Davis Medical School. That's the question.
Okay.
So on July 22nd, 2025, a board recap, Supervisor Plummer mentions a three-page document that UC Davis provided officials. So I'm sure you have that. Outlining what we would need to have in place to be considered a branch campus. What is UC Davis looking for?
Okay. So UC Davis met, and I was there also. UC Davis, being a government institution pretty much, mm-hmm. they're too slow for me.
Okay.
Plus, they're too bureaucratic.
Well, just one quick thing. We've been told that the school won't even happen for 10 years.
Well,
okay, so I don't know how slow these guys can be.
So, so medical school generally takes at least 4 or 5 years, 5 to 10 years. We are hoping to expedite that.
4 or 5 years or 5 to 10 years, which is it?
At least 4 or 5, I'm saying. At least 4 or 5 years.
Okay. And that's the best case scenario.
That's the best case scenario. But we're going to aim to expedite that. But the second thing is UC Davis, if you wait for UC Davis or anybody else from outside to do it,
okay,
you probably will be waiting forever.
Well, do we have the resources and time to meet their requirements, even if we did want to do it?
Yes, that is why. That
we
is
do
why,
have that.
Right. So what's happening is we have put a group of doctors and educators and healthcare professionals together, and they're coming from different perspectives, and they're actually, we have had our meetings now. We'll be going public with it soon. I have gone to the board of supervisors talking about it. We have those things which are putting in place behind the scene right now,
sure.
And we'll be going with the public. It's going to be a long journey. I'm not going to deny that. Okay, and it's going to be not just for doctors. It's going to be for all healthcare professionals, including nurses.
Is that document available to the public?
It's not. It's not available
to the public.
And there's a technical reason for that.
Okay.
And the reason is there are three things you need. One is you need money. Second, you need accreditation with the state and federal bodies. The third thing you need is a faculty. So all these things are putting the pieces of puzzle together, which will take the whole village to do it. And we are working on that. So,
do you have an idea of locations? I'm not asking where they are, but do you have an idea of locations of where this would be housed and
great
built?
Question. And this is what we want, a distributed pattern. Eastern Pennsylvania, quite similar to us, they did the same thing in 15 years ago, and I just came to know of that. They have like five campuses. So our idea is, it's not just Reading, it's not just Shasta County, it's a distributed pattern which helps the entire North State. So campuses will be in multiple places. That's our vision right now.
Okay.
So that's our vision.
Don't we have to, you keep talking about campus, wouldn't we have to partner with somebody to have a campus?
Well, you can have a campus. So let's say you need a university, right?
Okay.
So Simpson is very interested in that.
Oh, good.
So
okay.
President Norm Hall has been very interested in this, and I just had a meeting with him for 2 hours yesterday, and we'll be coming more and more with this information. We'll be making this information more and more public. County is wanting to partner with that, as well as the local clinics and hospitals, and not just in Reading area, but also around the region.
Okay.
So that I see, not just solving the problem of healthcare access, actually it can become an economic engine. Think of a Mayo.
10 years from now, Doc.
Well, economic engines don't get built over 5 years or 10 months, Terry.
Oh, well, that'd be great. I mean, I'm in there. I'm just trying.
This is not going to help me. This is going to help the next generation.
I know that.
Yeah. And
that's good to put it in a scenario, because right as of August the 19th, here's something that I want to read you. At the next Board of Supervisors meeting, August 19th, 2025, healthcare consultant Chris Street, I don't know how he ever got there, will have time to present his findings about the current state of health in Shasta County and then provide recommendations for the board discussion. Agenda item is R2. He will show statistics that justify the need for a graduate medical education funding, which might include money to fund a medical school. However, there is no mention of UC Davis in the upcoming presentation, just references to state and federal programs. So Chris Street's recommendations for next Tuesday meetings are attain a designation as healthcare professional shortage and medically underserved area. In other words, we have to get that kind of designation, I guess, by the state. Appoint a 7-member panel of experts to bring forth founding of rural medical school in Shasta County, which I would think you would be on that. Seek federal special funding for increase of medical residency training programs in Shasta County. So are there two different medical school initiatives? If so,
no.
Which one is the better?
So, you know, we'll all have to work together. We cannot allow this to become a dogfight. We'll work with UC Davis, we'll work with Simpson, we'll work with Chico, we'll work with everybody around. And that's what I'm doing. I'm bringing the people from completely opposite perspective to make this happen, that this is going to be hard to work together.
Okay.
I'm actually a faculty at UC Davis. My daughter goes there, so I have a strong relationship with them.
Sure.
And we'll be seeking their help too. And they see the value in this. What I'm trying to figure out is everyone has a win-win situation. And that's what we're going to do.
Sure.
So whether it's County, whether it's Shark, whether it's UC Davis, we'll all will be working together. I promise you that. And already have a group. You will be surprised to see the people who would not be in the same room otherwise, and they will be working together.
Now, with this new cancer center that they're building over on Hartnell, the cancer center over there, what's going to happen with what they're using now? Is there something that we can use that for to get more? We need more medical people in our community? Right. I mean, that's the question. How do we do that in the next couple of years?
Yeah, good, great question. Because what this interprofessional school campus is going to take time. What do we do in the short term? So part of our plan would be to increase the residencies in our local area.
Nice.
For medical doctors training, as well as, it's not just about doctors, it's about x-ray techs, physical therapists. I have been asking and working with Dr. Norm Hall at Simpson University to see if we can bring a program for nurse practitioners.
Oh.
So that they can, right now our nurses, if they have to train to become nurse practitioners.
They don't have a nursing program now?
No, they have a nursing program. I'm talking about nurse practitioner program.
Gotcha. Okay,
so what happens is if a nurse wants to start writing medications, prescriptions, diagnose and treat the conditions, then they have to go through another 2-year program called nurse practitioner.
Got it.
So it's called advanced nursing.
Got it.
So they can actually prescribe medication.
Awesome.
A lot of our nurses do it, but you know where do they go right now? They have to go online or Sonoma State or something, and they spend $20,000-$30,000 on it. The money leaving our area. I want to reverse the trend. You know how much a doctor medical school takes? $500,000, $250,000 in direct tuition, $250,000 in living expenses. My daughter, she got almost perfect medical entrance score. She couldn't get a spot in California. Because why? Because there are not enough schools here compared to New York. She ends up in New York, spends $500,000, may or may not come back. So we have not just the money drain, but the brain drain also. We want to reverse that trend.
Now, and with the medical school, is it going to offer, what facets is it going to cover? Is it going to cover dental? Is it going to cover audio? Yeah. Is it going to cover, podiatry? Is it going to cover everything? What is it going to cover?
Call me a dreamer if you want.
Okay.
But it should have everything. It should have dentistry, podiatry, physical therapy, pharmacy, research, everything. Let me give you a parallel. And we think, this is what breaks my heart. People say, we can't do it. We're too small. Mayo Clinic started in a population of $30,000. Everybody heard of Mayo Clinic?
30,000 people, you mean?
Yes.
Okay.
30,000 population.
Yeah.
Even today, they're like 90,000 or something.
Right.
And they are what? Billions and billions of dollars of international program. And I can give you examples after examples. Rochester, New York. Syracuse, New York. West Virginia has schools there. These things become economic engine. Mm-hmm. Are they for profit? No. They don't make direct profit. But they make an economic engine. Why do you think Silicon Valley became so wealthy? Silicon Valley became wealthy because before Silicon Valley, there was research, there was all kind of vocational training, professional training in Stanford, in UCSF, in Berkeley. And it's not just about the PhDs, it's not just about the MDs, it's about every level. It's about X-ray tech. Do you know we do not have any X-ray tech school? X-ray tech school, the next X-ray tech school used to be in Yuba City. I heard they shut down and in Sacramento now.
You have to go clear to Sacramento to become an X-ray tech?
Exactly.
Okay.
You know how many kids we have who are talented and motivated and good work ethics and they stop dreaming because they can't afford to go out?
Right. Right.
That breaks my heart.
Well, I think the thing that you brought up is a great point, and that is that once they get somewhere, they stay there because of the lifestyle and stuff. Now, I've heard from a lot of people that younger people are more into the urban lifestyle in a lot of cases. And once they get there, they're really enjoying that urban lifestyle. I mean,
they get used to it.
Get used to it. Okay. Good point. And so here, what do we do to attract these young residents is it Shasta Regional that got like 17 new?
So I was part of this internal medicine residency starting. They have 8 residents coming every year.
Okay.
Coming year for internal medicine. And that's great. And we want to increase those kind of
short-term
and medium-term solutions. We absolutely want to increase. But we have to keep in mind this is only a short-term, medium-term solution. We want a long-term solution. Because it's not just about bringing people
in. Don't we need to do both?
We need both, exactly.
Yeah, we need both.
Yeah. So we are going to be working on both. But Terry, this is not just about bringing people from outside.
Sure.
I can tell you, it breaks my heart. Last evening, I was in an event, and one of the techs who work on my center comes to me very hesitantly, and she says, I'm trying to go to nursing school, but really, I really want to be a physician or a physician assistant. I don't think I can do it.
Sure.
It's too much money, too much expense, and I'm here's the heartbreaking part. They say, I think I'm not smart enough. No. Do not let anyone tell you that you are not capable or smart enough. Every child in this county is capable of doing what anybody can do.
You bet.
I came from a small town. People told me you can never be a doctor. If I can do it, anyone can do it. But why do they stop dreaming? Because it's too costly, too expensive, too difficult for them to leave the area. I want to change the dreams of these children here. And if we have something here, they will become. We don't even have to bring from outside. They will become doctors. They will become nurses, nurse practitioners, engineers, X-ray techs, ultrasound techs, therapists, pharmacists, scientists. They will do that themselves
here. I think that everything you're saying is what you want and is really good. And I agree with everything you're saying. But we need to be looking a little more short term because our economy here is terrible. We just lost 5 Rite Aids.
I agree.
I mean, there's buildings out there. We have more buildings, and I mean, it's insane. Yet we have a city of Reading where the people who work there are frickin' wealthy. I mean, people, you can answer the phone and make $150,000 a year.
I'm a city council person. I make $600 a month.
That doesn't count. I'm talking staff. You know what I'm talking about, Doc. I'm talking about the 950 people that work at that city
hall. I just
want
to make it clear. I make $600 a month. And I actually give it to my executive assistant.
You probably do it free.
No, executive assistant. I make a schedule.
Dr. Januka, I have a question. In the Intermountain area, we have traveling nurses, and we actually have a housing facility that puts up these traveling medical personnel. Why? Why do we not have permanent personnel? What is the story with these traveling nurses?
Okay, this is a subject which can take an entire hour or maybe more because this is a problem created directly by the federal and state government. How are we running our health care in the past, 100 years or 200 years? County ran it. County had a general hospital until 1988, and they had a mental health clinics with that. And you know what happened when they closed? All our healthcare outcomes.
Yes.
They rapidly went down. The reason, and I'm not saying the county government should be running everything. I'm not saying that. But there's some essential services like fire, police, sewer, water. Local government is best situated to function and provide that safety net.
Sure.
And that healthcare provision, mental health, hospital care for general hospital who cannot afford to or who can't help themselves because they're very old or, you know, mentally ill or disabled. That is a county function. We gave that away. We outsourced it. And federal government and state government are directly responsible for creating a mess of healthcare in this country over the last 30 years. Now, I can't fix that. I can tell you the 3 solutions which are very simple. I can tell you 3 problems very simple, 3 solutions very simple, but I cannot execute that because I do not have the authority from federal and state government.
That seems to be the running theme here. We only have about 2 minutes left, but that does seem to be the running theme that the state or the federal government seems to get in the way of our liberty every time we turn around.
Oh, maybe Obamacare was...
I spoke about it 15 years ago. I was in this room in 2007 saying this is going to be a disaster.
And
in a very simple words, here's the thing. When the system becomes so big,
yes,
they become too complex.
Yes,
even the United Health CEO says, "I didn't create the system; it's a mess." Okay, you're profiting from it. Simple solution is make it transparent cost, which everybody gets paid equally, and run it at a local level. Let the counties run the healthcare.
Why don't they simplify it and dumb it down so it's so easy to do
exactly. That
a third grader can figure it out?
Exactly.
Let's just do it that way.
Keep it simple. Keep it simple, right?
Yes.
Just keep it the patients and the doctors or the nurses take care of the things themselves.
Yeah.
And let the free market decide in that.
It's kind of like basic algebra, the KISS method. You know, keep it simple, stupid.
That is
just keep on doing it.
And the cost of transparency, site neutrality, and Trump had started that in his first term, and he has again passed executive orders for that.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a few simple things you can do it and fix it.
There we go.
Local, transparent, site neutral, and do it.
Outstanding. Well, we need to have you back on again, Doc, so you can go into those 3 things. Seriously.
Yeah.
That's good stuff.
But I can't do that, Terry.
No, but the idea of explaining that. See, the problem is we really can't do a lot of things. That's probably why, you know,
Hey, before we go too, since you're on city council, I'm volunteering my street to be one of the first streets in the town to be fixed. I live in a very nice neighborhood.
Hey, no. I'm sorry. Second, you're second. First is mine. Mine has a lot of bottles in front of me.
Oh my gosh. Because I'm going to start bringing the tire and the wheel rim repairs
to
the city.
Mine is a bigger bottle than yours.
If they don't start fixing it.
But here's the other problem. You do not want that street to be narrowed for bicycle lanes.
No, they won't. They have a sidewalk.
Dr. Paul Danuka, a patriot. Thank you, sir, for being
thank
on
you
here.
So
we
much
love you,
you,
and thank you
thanks,
for
Doc.
Being on here and really getting down to the nit-grit here.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Time has come.
For 51.
Let's get her done.
Hey, CA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill?